Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. This is the International Black Summit talk show, The Wealth Club, brought to you by the International Black Summit Network. My name is Glenn Greenidge. I'm the host of the event tonight, and we've got a couple of guests with us. We've got Mr. John Carr from NAIC. We have Ms. Nanette Barry from Millionaire Real Estate Investing, and we've got Bill Patterson from PDEG, New York, Limited Investment Partnership. But before we start, I'm going to actually read the Declaration of the International Black Summit. The Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. And again, we're going to start off, and tonight's topic are investment clubs, and we're going to talk a little bit about what the benefit of them are and how our listeners can leverage themselves and use the information to forward their net worth. So, again, the three players, the three panelists I have today is John Carr from NAIC, Nanette Barry from Millionaire Real Estate Investing, and Bill Patterson from PDEG New York Limited Investment Partnership. So let's start out with John. So John, what? Tell me a little bit about NAIC, which is now better known as Better Investing. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the history of NAIC, please.
Certainly. My name is John Carr. I currently serve as secretary for the New York chapter of Better Investing, formerly known as NAIC, which stands for the National Association of Investment Clubs. I've been a member of NAIC now for about 8 years, and I've been active in my chapter as a director for about five, six years. What NAIC does, or should I say that what Better Investing does, we're in the business of making baby capitalists. Or put it to another word, we try to empower people in teaching them how to invest, and showing them how to invest in stocks, how to better watch their portfolios, how to make the decision on what a good company looks like. Because we all, as one of my teachers said, it's not so much that people buy bad companies; they pay too much for good ones. NAIC basically works on four principles: that you should invest regularly, that you should reinvest your earnings, your dividends, that you should invest in growing companies, and that you should diversify among size and class. And if you can do that, you have a pretty good shot at doubling your money every 5 years of what you invest in. And that, in a nutshell, is in what Better Investing does. And I hope to talk about a little bit more about it as we go along in the program.
Great. Thank you. Nanette, would you introduce yourself and a little bit about the folks are part of your team? Nanette, are you there? Okay.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can hear you now.
Wonderful. Yeah, this is Nanette Barry, and my background is that I came out of college looking for something greater than a 9-to-5 job, and was always searching for the way to wealth. And as I was learning how to become an investor and how to build wealth, real estate was one of the things that really came in my path at that time. So what I do now, I'm an agent with Keller Williams Realty, is my mission is to get the people I work with from where they are to owning their own property to building a real estate portfolio that cash flows them money to pay their bills and fuel their mission in life. One of the things that came up for the Millionaire Real Estate Investor, this is a book that Gary Keller, the owner of Keller Williams, wrote. Our mission is to, the process of becoming a millionaire real estate investor goes from first thinking a million, knowing that you can be an investor, and knowing that real estate, after you've decided to become an investor, real estate is an option. Then there's buying a million, knowing what it takes to buy the great properties out there. Then there's owning a million in equity, meaning your net worth is now $1 million. And then the last and final step is receiving a million, receiving cash flow on your equity pullout and passive business income of $1 million a year. And that's the process that we go through in becoming a millionaire real estate investor.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Bill Patterson, would you give us a little of your background and tell us a little bit about the Padeg Group?
Okay. Let's see. I'll do it in three parts. First, I'm a member of International Black Summit. That declaration you read is our vision statement. I've been active in that organization for approximately 15 years. Also, I'm a member of the Padeg Group with Glenn. We are training and research team, and along with being investors, I've been active there for 10 years, I think, that we've been in existence. I'm also on one of the teams that we set about to set up an investment club with my personal family. This is an extension of the work we do in Padeg. You know, we're moving into the community and helping people like my family members, organize themselves into investment clubs. And so I'm pretty much, that's pretty much what I do right now, help to set up investment system in my family with the investment club. So that's what I do generally. I like to think that what I'm doing is carrying out dictates of the International Black Summit. This is part of that statement that you read about building communities and providing resources to fund our communities. I take that very seriously. I think an investment club is one of the ways of actually doing that. And that's kind of like my purpose and my goal, along with the people that I work with. I think I'll stop right there for a moment.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the next question that I have is, how would one get started in an investment club? So if I had a group of four or five people, given the various models that are available here, NAIC, the Millionaire Real Estate Investor, and Padeg, how would I get started? Let's start with Nanette.
First, the first thing you do to get started is to make sure that you all have the same mission. And once you're in line with that and you realize that you have that in common, the second thing would would be to educate yourself first. The purpose of the group would be to educate yourself first through knowledge, and then move to the next step of educating yourself through experience, actually getting out there and investing in property, and always having a mentor along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay, great. Thank you. John?
Well, I have to really agree with Nanette, what she said, because that is pretty much the process that we use with our model club here in New York City. Back when we used to meet at the Fashion Institute of Technology, we had three active model clubs going, which showed the process not only of how a club gets formed, but people could come and actually see a club in action. And that's very much of how we put it together. You got between 10 to 15 people together, and you can start a club with as little as 5 people. I think you have to have at least 5. But you definitely have to make sure that everybody is on the same page, as they say. You want to make sure that everybody is understanding that they are there to make money. They are there to learn about how to invest in stocks, learn more about how to make that an effective part of their financial lives. But definitely you want to make sure that everybody both shares and understands the mission statement. Once you've got that, then it is a matter of education. One of the things that a lot of better investing clubs ascribe to is making sure that the members go through some of the better investing classes. That is, how to put together a stock selection guide, how to know what a good company looks like, etc. And a lot of clubs will front the money for those classes for their members, or at least they'll try to. The better clubs that I've noticed will do that. But definitely education is a good big part of it. Once you got that, then one experience that we had was we divided, in that same club that we had 15 members, we split the 15 members into like 3-person groups, and we had them do the steps that it would take them to get together as a club, as a functioning business entity, because when you get right down to it, that is what an investment club is. It is a business. So you had one group researching what broker to use. You had another group researching what forms they would have to fill out and register with the New York State, with New York State and federally. You had one group determining whether or not they wanted to have a subscription to Valueline, et cetera, and so forth. And then once all of that was, another group put together the bylaws and the operating statement. So that by the time they met that next month, they had everything that they needed. And they could vote on things like, okay, do we want to use a full-service broker, or do we want to go with Scottrade or something like that? And then they were ready to apply what they learned. And during all of this, during their first year, they had at least one director from the New York chapter as their mentor, helping them where they needed, answering questions when they needed it, and every now and then giving them a kick in the butt when they needed it to get things moving. Whenever you get a bunch of people together trying to decide about money, you can get arguments that can go on for months. So every now and then you need to have somebody say, okay, people, let's get back on focus here. So having the mission and knowing what you're doing is definitely key.
Definitely good.
And quickly, Glenn, I wanted to piggyback on that, because the mentor, like you said, if you're arguing forever, the mentor brings you back in line to thinking like an investor and gets you back on that plane of thinking as an investor, so you're not going all over the place with your fears and, you know, all the things that hold us back.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson, what...
Yeah.
I
agree with both speakers, almost in every detail. But I would like to add that in my family, what brought us together initially was a desire for our family to raise money to support our children way through college. We had a lot of young people who were college bound, but who needed support and didn't have money, you know. So we had this common goal, and we gathered and discussed how to raise money And I happen to have been one of the members of that group, and I happen to have been in PADEG. So I told them about PADEG and our association with NAIC and Better Investing, and they went for it. We decided to organize an investment club, and the first thing we did was to elect people who we thought could do some of that mentoring that you just spoke of, and we set up two trainers, myself and Glenn, and we set about introducing them. We're still in this process, introducing them to doing due diligence. By they'll be learning the SSG and some of the other forms that make it possible to explore stocks. So we're there, and they're on their educational bend right now. That's where we are in this particular group. We haven't actually invested yet, but we are in the process of developing ourselves and getting our tools together.
One of the things that I hear that's very consistent is certainly the getting the synergy of the group together to make sure that the group is looking or at least thinking along the same lines in terms of goals and objectives. Let me ask the question this way. Within the group, is there a conscious decision to go short-term, long-term, or interim investing?
I'd like to think
there has to be.
In our group, we had to look to see why the individual was there, whoever that individual happened to be who showed up. Why are you here? What is it that you want? Are you for long-term investment? Are you trying to get money overnight, the quick thing, what is your purpose? People need to understand their purpose for being there. And that's one thing. And they need to understand what the word risk means, that we're talking about predicting a future, and that one cannot always accurately predict a future. So there's risk involved, and so people have to know this, and they have to know how to invest their money, how not to invest certain money, your rent money or your food money. There's some things you need to do or know before you step into this risk situation. Does that answer?
Yeah, that answers
your
question. I think John, did you have something to add to that?
Yeah, I was going to piggyback on that. I definitely agree, and I definitely advocate that you establish with the original members that you start your investment club with, and any newcomers that you have that you bring in, that you one make sure that your investment styles match. Now, I mean, you could have investment clubs where the focus is definitely long-term investing. You can have. I've seen clubs where they were totally made up of momentum players, and boy, was that an interesting group. You have groups that invest in not just stocks, but also in whatever financial vehicle that you would have. But definitely make sure that you are agreeing, because that will, if you don't, or if you find out later that, well, this person said he was interested in long-term investing, but he really wanted to make like $1 million in 2 months, that can tear your group apart.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Really, it's a bit basic, very, very important that, I think.
Yeah. Nanette, in your realm, given that you're dealing with real estate, of course, the goal would have to be more long-term than not, because of the non-liquidity of real estate and real estate as an investment. Is that one of the processes that you go through in your group as well?
Actually, it depends on the strategy you use in real estate, because you do have short-term strategies like wholesaling and fix and flip, and then you have the long-term strategies for the building wealth. So the short-term strategies are for the cash flow. The long-term strategies are to build the wealth. And so what we're looking at is we're always being conscious and aware of our individual whys, because we find that the smaller the why, the shorter the term of the group. So the bigger the why, the longer the term of the group and its purpose, its mission, and vision.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
That's true.
Now, we've gotten to the point where we've talked about how the groups are formulated. Now, how often do you all meet? You know, what's a regular meeting occurrence, and then what occurs in the meeting? I'll start with you, Nanette.
Well, we meet once a month.
Okay.
And that's our basic meeting. But within the month, we also go to different educational sessions, like whether it be other investment clubs, organizations that educate investors, et cetera. So we meet in between those meetings to educate each other. So we're there together so that when we get that information, we can come back to our meetings and say, what did you get from that? Or, you know, because we always see things in our own way, through our own glasses. And so that's what we do in the meantime. We're always educating ourselves in the meantime.
Now, do you do that as a whole group or a subgroup or...
Subgroups.
Okay.
A lot of times we'll have one person go to this meeting or go to that meeting, and sometimes it'll be all of us. If we think it's necessary that all of us be at a certain event, then we'll delegate the whole group to go.
And give us an example of what kind of a meeting that maybe last month or the month before that you would have wanted to attend.
Yeah, definitely. In the Bay Area, we have investor club meetings where they have different types of professionals, whether they be 401k professionals or people who know how to buy property without getting a loan, that come out to these meetings. And so if we're in certain areas and it's more convenient for us to go to this investment club meeting, for instance, I'm in Oakland, going to San Francisco is closer, but Petaluma is far away, and we have someone in our group who lives out that way. So she'll go to that investor club meeting during the month, just as I go to the meeting in San Francisco during the month. And then we bring back that information to our monthly meeting.
So you're able to strategize and look to see what is the best use of your resources and then bring that back to contribute to the group.
Exactly.
Okay, great. John Carr, what about you?
Well, funny you should ask. The investment club that I belong to, MVP Investors, met Monday night, so I can tell you exactly what we do. First, our club is about 6 members. At its largest point, it was about 18. During the past year, we had a large amount of attrition, partly due to people moving, others people with jobs and the like. But we've got a very strong core, and we're slowly building back up. So we start our meeting with, first off, putting in the monthly dues. We meet month to month, and we collect $40 per month from each member. And that goes to our treasurer, who then puts it into our bank account. We use Bivio. That, for those of you who are interested, you can find out more information with www.bivio.com, and they handle the accounting. So once that's done, we go over the minutes of the last meeting, where we look over what we have in our watch list and to see if anything was coming up that way. Each member gives a report on a stock that we have in our portfolio. Currently, there are 5 stocks in our portfolio, so each person gives a report on one stock. In case you're interested, those stocks are Fastenal, Stryker, Walgreens, XTO Energy, and Coach. So you have 5 reports going on as far as where the company is, what the present price is, if there's been any interesting developments. As you might guess, since October, there's always been interesting developments going on.
A lot of news, yes.
Oh, yeah. So one of the perennial arguments has been over the past several months, do we want to add to any of our positions now, or do we want to see, or do we want to wait? We'll leave that one for aside for a second. Mm-hmm. Okay, once that's done, then yours truly comes in with the portfolio report. So we keep one thing, and I want to, and I should back up a bit. One thing that I advocate with that all investment clubs should do is take a good look at least once a quarter, if not once a month, at where their portfolio stands. Has it fallen over the quarter? Are the property values moving up or down, et cetera? And that way, you know that if a member brings up an interesting situation, then you have a better idea of saying, well, this is good, but we don't have enough cash on hand. What should we sell in order to make up the difference? Mm-hmm. So you don't end up selling somebody's pet project. Anyway, once that's done, then any members who are bringing in stocks to present, that is, if they've done the research, they've done the stock selection guide on a company that they would like us to consider buying, then they'll do the presentation for that then. For example, we had presentations on Monday for Quality Systems. We had a presentation for Novartis, which is a ADR, that is an American Depository Receipt. We had a presentation for Deckers Outdoor Company, the shoe company. And then once those presentations are given and any decisions are made to either buy, hold, or what have you, or put it on the watch list, that's when we put in for new members. Every club should have some kind of mechanism in place for how they bring new members into the group. In the case of our club, someone we consider for membership has to have attended 3 meetings, and on the 3rd meeting they have to present a stock.
Okay.
And in this particular meeting we had a gentleman by the name of Steve present Fluor. He's presenting it as a potential Obama play, and he backed it up with the proper due diligence. So once he gave his report, we asked him, if we thanked him, we asked him at least so we could vote on whether we wanted to vote him in. Once that's done, any other new business, any reports, meetings gone to events attended, any books that you want to share, et cetera. Someone did a report recently on one of the Little Book Big Profit series, the book by Peter Schiff called The Little Book of Bull Moves and Bear Markets. And after all of that, this process normally takes about anywhere between an hour and an hour and a half, we close the meeting, and then we go someplace for dinner.
Oh.
And that's how I cover. I want to recommend the fact of food. I recommend highly that you should have some food somewhere in your meeting, just to keep the wheels going. Well.
Yeah. And you meet how often?
We meet once a month.
Once a month as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Great. And I'm actually going to come back to the new membership, but I want to give Bill a chance to talk a little bit about the structure of the meeting. I know that maybe the sharing and clearing. But go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. Well, that's the PDAG meeting. Remember, I belong to two, but I'll talk about PDAG first. They are really 6 of us. That's down from about 10, I think, initially. We meet once a month. we read our vision statement at the beginning of each meeting to serve to remind us of why we're there and why we formed ourselves to begin with. Let's see. We do reports of how much we have in our treasury, people reports on who paid what. They're required to pay as a minimum of $50, I think, a month. Most of us pay more than that. And let's see. After the report.
Talk a little bit about the sharing and clearing.
Oh, right, yeah. I knew there was something. Yeah, after we read the vision statement, we have something called sharing and clearing, and I think it's, for me, it's a very profound experience where we share with each other how we are about money, what have we discovered about money and abundance or the lack of it, you know. What is our experience of money? And we spend a good bit of time sharing who we are about that idea of abundance, you know. What is abundance? Defining it, you know, living it, talking about it. I find it to be a very soul-searching kind of experience. I get to explore risk and security, the need for security in myself, the need to know without just the need to know and how that hamstrings a lot of what I do. So Glenn can probably tell you some more about this, but it's a profound experience, and we do it every month. We become clear about a lot of our own personal handling of money. You know, whether we save or don't save, or how we use money or don't use money. It's a really a clearing tool to clear ourselves internally, psychologically, emotionally, as well as clearing us about ourselves, about how we are with money, and clearing us about our participation even in the club.
Now that's the more mature group, Padeg. Now what about for us, the your family group?
Right.
That's still pretty much in formulation. What?
Yeah.
Give us just a quick synopsis on
right. We're a new group coming together, and I don't think we've quite found our legs, you know, yet. We don't quite know how we're going to be, you know, but we're pointing in a direction. We're discovering stuff about ourselves. We're discovering financial intelligence. This is a big thing for us, just to learn the language of investment. We have a different take on the world. You can read the newspaper now and understand what they're talking about when there's shares and mm-hmm. all these kind of things, you know, that are going on. This current crisis is, even though it's very confusing, it's still something we can talk about almost intelligently, you know. I mean, just simply having done this work, so it's not foreign to us. It's not like another world out there someplace. That's where the For Us Club is. You know, we're learning intelligence, financial intelligence, and we're experimenting, doing due diligence, you know, looking up stocks, going places, value line, whatever one uses. We have people go, each person takes a stock and studies it and comes back and it's to report on it, and he tells why they like that stock or why they don't like it or why they think we should buy it. And now that's it. As I said, we haven't bought anything yet.
Give it time.
Right. Now we're actually, I'll start with you, Bill, since you're already there. So what's the process for a new member? What's the procedure?
In Padeg?
In For Us and in Padeg.
Well, For Us is easy. Just anybody can, anybody in our family, and some people who are not in our family can come and join. If you pay the basic fee is, I don't know, what is it, $50? I think that was, I don't remember what the basic fee is, but there's a basic fee. And be willing to participate and understand that we are a long-term investment club. We're not speculators or anything like that. You know.
And what about Padeg?
And in Padeg, people can join. They can come and visit our meetings. if they wanted to become members with us, we have two kinds of membership. The founding
which is general partners and limited partners.
The general partner, right, yeah, general partner. Well, and then limited partners. General partners are required to pay a substantial amount of money. I think it varies from time to time, depending upon the time they come in. But they would probably have to put in something like $500 minimum, if I'm not mistaken. Limited partners put in also a limited amount of money. But limited partners can come and do reports and whatnot, but they don't have the same rights, actually, that the...
The limited partner comes in at 500, and they just basically put their money in. There's no requirements for them to do reports and to manage the partnership. Whereas the general partners come in at 5,000, and they're by invitation only on that level.
Okay.
But they have to be invited to be part of. And so the general partner does the reports, responsible for managing the money and managing the group.
Right. They do all the work, really.
Good. Thanks. Nanette, how do you infuse a new member into your organization, your model?
It's really more informal than what John and Bill are talking about. Basically, it's anyone who's passionate about becoming an investor first and then sees real estate as an option for investing. Because, like I said, our first goal is to really educate people to see from the eyes of an investor before they ever really take that first step to join with us to buy real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're looking at. The process is just someone who has that interest. The process comes from someone who has that interest.
Gotcha. So conceivably, someone could come in and kind of hang out with the group and kind of learn the knowledge, get some knowledge before they and actually have an experience of it before they actually, shell out money.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, how does that work? Actually, the money aspect.
The money piece for our club, it's not an investment club where you shell out money every month. Like I said, where we are now is at the educational stage for the group, and so that's where we are. Every month, what we're doing is we're really building ourselves to train each other to see things from the eyes of an investor, because I think, as you've seen in real estate, we thought a lot of people were investors, but they were mostly just speculating. And so when the tide hit, people went with the tide.
Right. Yeah, they went out with the tide.
Yes, they came in and went out with the tide, exactly.
Exactly. And so that's why it's so important for us we're not even really talking about the money now, just because we really want people to see from the eyes of an investor. And when we see there are people who are committed to doing that, that's when we start the monthly donation of money and things like that.
And are you organized so that there's a distinction or maybe a seasoned investor versus a newbie or rookie and how they participate in the decision process of purchasing the real estate?
The monthly meeting, it does not distinguish that. But what happens is you do have breakout from that monthly meeting where it's for the purpose of education. You have a breakout from that of people who say, hey, I'm ready, and let's do some deals together. Let's close some transactions together.
So I could pull you to the side and say, Nanette, listen, I've got 10 or 20,000. Let's you and I partner up and invest in something.
Once we see that, hey, you do think from the eyes of an investor.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very
if
good.
I can piggyback on that.
Yeah,
yes,
please,
definitely. Yeah, you definitely have to see some kind of interest because as I'm sure Nanette will vouch for, you get a lot of people who will come to meetings like hers, and a similar group in New York is the Ultimate Real Estate Investors Club, which is driven by the name of Barney. And you get people who will come and just want to partner on a deal and partner on deals. So, yeah, I got the money, let's invest. And they're not interested in learning how to be an investor. They just want to see how much money they can make as quickly as possible. And you really want to, and I'm sure some of them are sincere, but that's not really what you want to have in your group.
And that's a great point, because we've seen so many people who thought it was just money. Okay, I have money, now let's do something. And we've seen them go bankrupt and even more, you know. So especially in this market, it's very important, because we've learned those lessons and we've seen in true form the manifestation of it not just being about money.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important that we really get to we go through the process of the thinking and the mentality of an investor and getting to that point before we even take that step.
That's true. Remember the old saying, if you take two people together and one person's got the money and the other one's got the experience, the person with the experience will have the money and the person with the money will end up having experience.
Right.
Very good. I'm going to keep that one.
I like that one. John, would you talk a little bit about a new member coming into the fold? You talked a little bit about it in terms of the three meetings. Is there a donation? Tell me a little bit more about the process of adding a new member to the group.
Well, if I can preface that by saying there are probably about a lot of different methods as into welcoming new members into your average stock investment club as there are investment clubs. I mean, one thing that I think we try to advocate out of the New York chapter is that you don't want to make it as hard as possible, because you do want more people coming into your club, but you don't exactly want to make it easy either. It goes back to what I was saying about people. Once you get a person who's very gung ho about it at the beginning, and then they start treating it like their own personal mutual fund, they just put in a check every month, and never do any work.
Right.
So, I mean, I think our club probably is maybe a little bit more draconian than most, because we insist on that educational component of it. We want to see that the person we're bringing into the club knows what they're doing before we ask them to join as a member. If you're talking about the money aspect of it, as I said, we put in $40 a month, and we ask new members who are coming in to put in an additional $200 so they can have a little bit more equity into the club than they would if they just started putting in $40. It also shows that they're serious about it. I've seen clubs that have been around for 20 years where that entry fee has been $1,000 or more.
Okay.
But as I said, there you have clubs where the founding members literally put their kids through college through following their investment policies. So you can understand where they're coming from with that.
Gotcha. So it's a little different depending on the structure of the club itself, so you've got some leeway.
Yeah. What we do suggest, though, I'm not saying that you have to have it in your operations agreement or your bylaws, but you should have some mechanism in place for how you admit members, because that will allow you to, if you have a member who's not pulling their weight, take them, move them out of the club with as little fuss and little fuss as possible.
Okay. So one of the things that are important, I'm hearing, is a policies and procedures document that has the group be guided through.
Mm-hmm.
New membership, leaving the club, et cetera. So some things need to be put in place for that.
That's
okay.
Right.
Okay, great.
Better Investing has a fantastic book on this, part of their educational series. It's called Investment Club Operations. And the book is $10. It's definitely worth the $10 for what it gives samples of operation agreements, bylaws, et cetera, and also runs through what a meeting looks like. And that's available through the Better Investing website at www.betterinvesting.org. And I highly recommend that to anybody who's thinking of starting an investment club.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that when we were starting PDEG Investment Group, one of the things that was very helpful for us was to be able to sit in on the you had an open investment club. As a matter of fact, there were actually about three or four going on. This was quite a few years ago, back in 96, 97, and it was held at FIT, and there mm-hmm. were you had a training to begin, and then you had different investment clubs that were operating at the same that we could go in and visit and mm-hmm. kind of sit in for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, and kind of observe the action.
Yeah, those. Yeah, that was great. Those trainings were NAIC trainings.
Yeah. Correct, yeah. I don't know, do you guys still have that?
Well, right now we do. We're getting back to doing that at the New York chapter. We've had several different locations of meetings since then. When FIT decided that they were going to start charging for the space, it kind of depleted our treasury really fast. So, since then, it's been a little bit of a struggle getting meeting places, but we have one kind of a permanent home now here in New York City, and that's at the AXA Equitable Building where we meet once a month. The only thing we can't do there is hold classes because Microsoft won't let us. But other than that, yes, we do have the breakout sessions where people can see, A, how a club runs, how to set up a dividend reinvestment plan, how to use the software. So I seem to get those a lot myself, the software demos. But other than that, those still exist. And go across the country. If you look at if you go online to the Better Investing site, you can see where the monthly meetings take place across the country, and you'll usually see a model club in action in those.
Okay, beautiful. All right, so good. So now we've gotten the people clear. Everybody's in sync. We've got an idea of what we want to do and how we want to do it. How do we pick the investment? Let's start with Nanette, because that's probably a little bit longer conversation than the stock one. How would you, you got everybody ready to go, everybody's clear, on the same education level. How do you go to the next level, take it to the next level?
So the next level is all of us deciding and agreeing on the criteria that we have for properties. Do we want single-family home? Do we want multi-units? How big or how small do we want to go? And then from there, we're looking as well, the second part is, once we do see that opportunity for that type of property, what do we want for a return? So what cash flow do we want once we buy this property? How much money do we want every month coming from this property? What return on the money that we invest in the property do we want? Do we want 10%? Do we want 15%? We look at all of that, and from there, once we have the criteria, we see the opportunity in front of us, we figure out the numbers and see if those numbers work for us, and that's how we make a decision of whether we're going with that property or not.
Okay. And is there a vote? Is there a consensus? Is there everybody has to be in agreement to move forward? Tell me a little bit about that process.
It is. Everyone has to be in agreement just because everyone has a stake in the property. And what happens is if we have someone in dissension, it's going to take a while, but we have to really work through, okay, what is the challenge? What is keeping them from coming to this agreement? So we can talk that out. If it's something that we really know that person's not going to get in on, then we know, okay, this is not something to move on.
Then you pick something different. Gotcha.
Exactly.
Okay, great. John?
Well, first thing you do is you put the stock pages up on the wall, then you get the monkey out of the closet, you blindfold them and hand them the darts, and then you let them throw. But seriously. Actually, in a bear market, that can work.
Exactly. They've proven that is not a bad technique sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes being when you're in a rising bear market and you could basically look like a genius no matter what you pick. Unfortunately, right now we're in a secular bear, and that means he who loses the least wins.
Exactly.
Definitely how you pick stocks is a little bit more complicated, but I think the principles with any investment are the same. You're looking at return of your money first and foremost.
Okay.
we advocate you want stocks that will give you a return of a compounded 15% or better. In other words, you're looking at by the rule of 72, you're doubling your money every 5 years.
Right. Okay.
You're looking at companies that have good fundamentals. NAIC, that is Better Investing, definitely falls on the fundamental analysis side of the stock investment ledger as opposed to the technical analysis side.
Okay.
Say
a little bit more about that for the viewers who don't know or understand what that means.
Okay. Put simply, fundamental analysis of a company means you're looking at how the management makes them, how the company does their money, how it fits within their industry. Is the management producing enough money? How's their margins? How's their operating margins? How is their return on equity? Are they growing the company? Are they using acquisitions to fuel their growth, which can backfire after a while? Are they giving a dividend? Are they not giving a dividend? And if so, why not? And then you're looking at all of these saying that if you have a good company, then the market will reward you for it. The market will reward you for it, assuming you get buy it at a good price.
Okay.
I mean, for example, Starbucks was a fantastic company. As they say, is a fantastic company. But if you bought it at the peak of its boom when it was about $100 a share, you'd be very disappointed with yourself right about now.
Sure.
Does this change the fact that they had a good model and they were leading their industry? No. It just meant that you bought it at the wrong time. So it goes back to what I was saying earlier about it's not so much people buy bad stocks, they pay too much for good ones.
Gotcha. Yeah,
now,
like that.
On the technical analysis side, there you're looking at price movement and volume movement. That is, that's where you get into things like charts.
Okay.
Charts, candlesticks, and the like. You're talking about, can you predict how a company's price will move? Given a certain amount of people buy on a certain day, will the stocks tend to trend up or down? And there are people who make a lot of money that way. That tends to be a more of a short-term strategy than it is a long-term strategy.
Okay.
And you have people who will vehemently argue on either side of it. One person who I respect highly, who works out of the New Jersey chapter, uses kind of an amalgam of both, where he uses fundamental analysis to determine where he's going to put his money, and he uses the technical analysis to tell him when he's going to buy.
Okay.
And it works for him.
Okay.
I don't know if I could do it for myself, but I definitely respect his being able to do it and make money.
So just for our listeners, so technical has to do more with the up and down of the chart. So you're doing more charting. And you're looking at the volume peaks associated with a buy or sell trend.
That's right. Definitely, when you're talking about technical analysis, trends are your friend. If you've got a downward trend, you might decide to either short or you might decide to stay on the sidelines and look for something better. Remember, markets will tend to move in one of three directions. It'll either move up, it'll move down, or it'll move sideways for a long time. And technical people with technical analysis tend to have a strategy for all three of those cases.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Mr. Bill, anything
yeah.
you'd like to add?
Let's see. Well, like the one you put the chart on the wall and somebody just blindfolds and picks, you know, we have...
You do know I was kidding with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I know.
Just want to make sure.
I have one of our members just likes the sound of Home Depot, you know, and they don't know anything about it. They just like the way it rings a nice sound in their psyche. And so that's one of the stocks they chose. Somebody else likes Fiona, the woman who used to run something or other, you know. They like the CEOs, you know, and they have a cult thing going about certain CEOs. That's another way. But generally, I think what we really do is probably we look for growth stocks, I just, and for the most part, something that will give us 15%, you know, over a period of time, you know. And maybe dividends and that kind of thing. we like to see an ascending earnings and price scale going up, you know. We do fundamental analysis, which is in depth. We use value line a lot. We've heard of technical analysis, but I don't think we've actually done any of it. Maybe Glenn has, you know. But by and large, we're sticking to fundamental analysis.
One of the things that I've looked at, I have looked at some technical analysis tools, and there are quite a few out there. InvestTools happens to be one of many. But one of the things that we looked at was that type of analysis didn't fit with us meeting once a month. In a technical environment, you need to be looking at your stock every day and making decisions every day, depending on what you saw or what you foresaw coming in the horizon. And
Glenn, I was going to say, even in with respect to real estate, that's the same thing. With technical analysis, it's almost, you know, speculation. So you really have to be in the game heavily to really time those trends properly, you know, with your investments. Fundamental analysis is just, for real estate, it's just buying right, making sure that you have cash flow when you buy property, and not saying, oh, I'll take this negative cash flow hoping prices will go up. You know, that's more technical analysis. Fundamental is saying, I'm going to buy right no matter what. I know this property is going to give me cash after I pay all the bills.
So you're really talking about, when you speak about real estate, you're talking about the market. So that particular market that you're buying in is it's got a future. It's got an upside. And so you're buying into that upside of that market. That
would be more technical analysis, looking at the trends and the timing.
Okay.
And then the fundamental analysis is saying, hey, can I get cash after I pay all the bills out of this property?
So you're doing a little bit of both then? No?
As an investor, we're doing fundamental analysis.
Okay.
Technical analysis is how a lot of people got caught in real estate on this downturn.
Okay.
It's how a lot of people get burned in stocks daily. I mean, take a look at what happened with the Dow today. How many people do you suppose got caught out when Wall Street decided they did not like the stimulus package that was handed out?
I mean, using that technical analysis.
They say, yeah. Hold it, I didn't see that coming. I just lost about 20% of my net worth. What am I going to do now? It's like, some people thrive on that, and I say more power to them. Myself.
Right.
Myself, that's not how I want to make my money.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
So that being said, though, for the benefit of the people listening, if you find that, hey, that floats your boat, please practice position sizing. And by position sizing, I mean if you're going to put in money, say put only a certain percentage in on whatever you decide to invest in, so that you're not losing the farm on any one particular investment. Because if you're going to do technical analysis, then position sizing is key.
Now, is position sizing the same as asset allocation, or
no,
is it similar? Or
no, they're not really similar. Asset allocation should be a part of everybody's in portfolio management. See, when you talk about asset allocation, then you're really talking about portfolio management.
Okay.
And I think Nanette will agree with me on this: is when you buy the type of properties that you hold. If you're going to hold for, if you're going to be holding some for cash, some for building your cash, you hold for cash flow. Others you hold for building your net worth, etc. You build a portfolio that way. That's where your asset allocation comes in. With stocks, asset allocation is definitely a matter of, one, the industries that you're in, and two, the size of the companies that you hold.
Okay.
We tend to, for example, Better Investing tends to advocate that you have 20 in a portfolio of, say, 5 to 10 stocks, 25% of them should be in what are called small capitalization companies, 50% should be in mid-sized companies, and another 25% should be in large-sized companies. That way you're protected against whatever ups and downs the markets tend to throw at you. You can take advantage of the growth or what have you, in those industries, because All companies don't grow or move at the same rate.
Mm-hmm. And for real estate, asset allocation is not only about whether you're buying for cash flow or appreciation. It's also the locations where you buy. Are you buying in an upper end area, an upper end property, or a lower end property? Are you buying out of state versus in state? So there are a lot of different ways you can allocate your assets for diversification in real estate. And what types of properties you're even investing in, that even has something to do with asset allocation.
So that you don't have an exposure, too big of an exposure in one particular area or not.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Excellent. Well, we've talked a lot about the plus sides of it. Are there any negative side to investment clubs?
Well, let's see. Negative sides to investment clubs. Well, if you don't really get along with people, then if you don't like being around a bunch of opinionated people who have their own ideas, may share your opinions but have their own feelings about doing things the right way and doing things your way, well, I can see where an investment club might not be the best thing for you.
Okay. So
and that's a great point, because one thing that it is very important to realize in an investment club is that we all work for one good. And so a lot of times we want to be around people who are just like us personality-wise. If you're the driver type, you want to be around driver types, and you don't want to be around that analytical person who takes a long time to decide. But in an investment club, you're going to need each piece of that pie, that personality pie, to make that investment club work. So the person who may wear their emotions on their shoulder, on their sleeve, you're going to have that person in your group. They might make you want to, you know, for the driver, they might want to hurl or something when they're dealing with that person. But when you're in an investment club, you have to know that every person is contributing to the greater cause, and they're there for a reason. You can't just say, oh, this person gets on my nerves, I don't want to work with that person.
So team is very important. And as with any team, you've got different positions and different players, and they all are contributing.
Yeah, that's why I have to give major props to Bill. I mean, you build clubs out of families, and then, Lord, if that's got to be the most dysfunctional building base
to
be.
Not my family.
I wasn't
complete and whole.
But you know, I do think that a person's personal view of the distinction risk ought to be looked at. You know, people vary in the amount of the way they risk living. Even, you know, some people want accurate, positive assurance that something's going to turn out, you know, that predictability really is possible. And it's not. I mean, if we were experts at predicting, we would have predicted the current thing that's going on, and we didn't. So some people just need to be certain, and I think that makes them very difficult to work with, because they won't play, you know, the same way you do, or willing to play. They're not willing to at least take some chance. I just find that's a stumbling block. How some of us operate around that word risk.
And that's where I go back to the personalities, because that person may be the analytical that does not want to make a mistake. They want it to be perfect.
Exactly.
And so they they don't want to move forward on that. But that's where the driver may come in and say, hey, we have to make a decision on this. You know, is it yes or no? And if it's no, give me some good reason. So all of us come together, because the driver may want to jump without a parachute. And then comes the analytical thing, wait, hold on a second. You know, and sometimes we say that's just a negative person, but sometimes that's the person with the parachute.
What you do with the analytical person, you put him in charge of the computer programs. You let him,
right.
You let him run the screeners. You let him or her crunch the numbers. And then you let them make the report and say, okay, under this condition, we'll make this much money. Under this condition,
exactly.
We'll make this much money. Okay, and then this way, and this one's likely to happen. Let them run their analytical circles and do what they do best.
Yeah,
yes.
We all serve.
Mm-hmm. Fully employ those skills in the club where they're needed.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there are two sides to it. And one is certainly to make sure that everyone is clear and aligned. But you also have to have some sort of diversity in terms of being able to what each person brings to the party. So there's a need to include all of that in the group dynamics of an investment club and what it takes.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction there. You use the word align. In our clubs, I think we align, which means that everybody has to agree. We're not voting. There's a distinction between voting and aligning. And so we don't vote. We align or not. And we can't pass a thing or do a thing unless everybody's aligned. Aligned does not mean you agree with everything, but you're willing to go along with it. Okay? So that's a... But there are some clubs where people actually vote, you know, I mean, like the majority run the thing. And I think that can be dangerous, too. And the people who didn't vote for it, if it fails, you know, created a problem maybe within the group.
Yeah, there's no buy-in.
Didn't vote for it, you know.
Yeah. Well, one way
you John said it best. He said, you know, If you don't like people, basically, if you don't like people to share their opinions, no matter how different they are from the rest of the group, an investment club is not for you. And it was so, that was such a key point, because we have to know that there's nothing wrong with any of us.
Very good.
Because the main thing for an investment club is that you are learning.
Yes.
Education is a part of this. We're all learning together, and we're all growing together as investors. And a lot of people forget that's one reason for building in little things like Robert's Rules of Orders into the operating procedures, so that you do have a mechanism for voting as to whether you buy a stock or you buy a property or you sell something, etc. So
right.
At least the rules, everybody knows that the rules are there.
And the foundation.
The foundation's there, and that this, if you sign that partnership agreement, that you agree to, that means you agree to abide by the rules. And if you can't abide by the rules, then you leave, and there's no hard feelings.
For everybody, this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Wealth Club, and we're wrapping up. We ran over a little bit on our second segment. And tonight we've got our guest, John Carr from NAIC, New York chapter. We've got Nanette Barry from Millionaire Real Estate Investing. And we've got, she's from the West Coast. And we've got Bill Patterson from PDEG New York Limited Partnership. What can you give our listeners just to have to leave them with? What's your basically our closing statement? And give each of you a turn. In closing, anything that you'd like to say about investment clubs and anything else that you'd like to add? And also please leave your information so people can contact you. So go ahead, John, please start.
Okay. The thing that I would want people most to take away from this is the most important thing is to get started. If you want to be a part of an investment club, or if you want to get you and your friends want to get together and start your own investment club, then do it. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Just do it, because every minute you delay has an opportunity cost. And if you, sure, there are going to be times you're not going to be perfect. You're going to be times when you stumble. There are going to be times when you seriously hate your fellow investment club members. There are going to be times when you have exhilarating success. And but the important thing is to get started. And there are people who will help you. There are people who will be more than happy to act as mentors. And that's one reason why Better Investing exists. We're the support group for all of those investment clubs out there that subscribe to our philosophy of doing things. And directors are more than happy to go to clubs and do club visits. But we can't do it if we don't know you're out there, and we can't help you if you're not willing to get started. So, yeah, that's the one thing that I would say. Take action, because nothing happens unless something moves.
Gotcha. And where can they reach you at, John?
Now, you can reach – the best thing to do would be to contact me through the New York chapter webpage on the Better Investing website, which is www.betterinvesting.org, and you should be able to contact me through the New York chapter. That way, any specific questions, either I can answer them, or the director who has that expertise can answer that.
Great. Thank you. Nanette?
I want to ditto what John said. One thing that is very important to know is that anyone can do it, but not everyone will. This is what was said in the book Millionaire Real Estate Investor, that it's a tale of the willful versus the wishful. And once we know that we can do it and we're clear that anyone can be an investor, then we can move towards the action and really know that investing can really make a huge impact on our lives, building that financial wealth. And I also think it's important that we affirm all the time, I am building wealth, and I'm always looking for those opportunities that I can turn into deals that work for me. Always affirming that I'm an investor and I'm always looking to build wealth. That's going to be very important in this whole investment game, the thinking, the mindset. That's what's going to get you there, and knowing that anyone can do it. And my contact information is N as in Nancy, B as in boy, A-R-R-I-E, at kw.com. nbari@kw.com.
Great. And is there any intention of growing your groups nationally? I know you're located in Oakland right now. Are you looking for other cities to start up?
Definitely. Anyone who's interested in that, please email me and we can have a conversation around that. And also I wanted to point out that here in Oakland we're actually having our monthly meeting on February 26th from 6 to 7:30 at Keller Williams Realty in Oakland. So anyone who's interested in that, who's listening to this in the area, can email me about that as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Bill Patterson, anything on closing?
Okay. What I would like to say is starting an investment club, you take your own economic fate in your own hands. We have a chance of creating abundance for yourself and for others. It's the way of out of being a victim, of life victim. You know, you actually create the possibility for financial success. You yourself, it's within your power to do that. So this is a tool, this is a mechanism for achieving financial security and economic responsibility for ourselves. Also, I think this is a tool for bonding. This is a tool that gets people to come together and discuss and see and become, work with each other and interdepend upon each other. And we learn how we can cooperate and create something rather than go in our egotistical, unilateral way. So bonding is a big thing that comes out of this effort. Even though it's about money, it's about more than money. It's about being human and being able to relate to another person. So those are the kind of things I find, precious in this.
And do you have a contact?
I have an email address that anybody can send to me at. It is billwp39@aol.com.
Very good.
Thank anybody you. Interested in investment groups in the Northeast, I would say give me a call.
Great.
Lynn, I know we're going over time. There's one more thing I have to say, is that back in our primitive days, all of us have to be investors in some capacity, whether we were cattle rearers, whether we were farmers. We all knew the idea of investing, that you sow a seed and you expect something to grow from that. And depending on how you sow the seed, you nurture it, you weed out all the things that aren't supposed to be there. That's the harvest you were able to reap. And it's the same thing with cows. That with cows, there are people today that they know that they can either get cash flow from the cow's milk and all the other products that come from the cow, or they can get appreciation once they're building their cattle, just from the birth of new cows. So we have to realize that investing is natural to who we are.
Okay, excellent. Very good.
I know we're running over, but I got to add one last thing.
Okay.
For the benefit of the listeners who just might be in the Michigan area, if you really want to see a hands-on discussion of what this all is about, on April 3rd and 4th, the Midwest region of Better Investing is holding a regional conference in Lansing, Michigan. And that's going to be 2 days where you're going to have company presentations, you're going to have seminars, you're going to have classes, and you're going to get to see regular folks doing this, what we've been discussing all night here. So more information on that can be found at the Better Investing website. But if you're in that area and you're listening to this and you have that weekend free, I suggest you definitely go.
Where is it again? Lansing?
Lansing, Michigan. At the Causeway Bay Hotel, April 3rd and April 4th. More information can be found at www.betterinvesting.org.
I want to thank my three guests. I've got a couple of folks on hold for the last segment. That I'm going to get to momentarily, but I want to thank the three of you for coming on and talking about one of my passions, which is investment clubs and what is available. What I found for myself is the opportunity to partner up with like minds and to be in sync and to grow and to participate in a team effort. One of the things that I want to read right now is from T. Harv Eckert, and it talks about attitudes of wealth. My part-time business is managing and investing my money and creating passive income streams. And for me, that's what investment clubs are pointing to and are making things happen. So, again, thank you for being on the show, Wealth Club. This is an International Black Summit talk show. I'm your host, Glenn Greenidge, and certainly would you all can stay on. I'm going to be inviting two additional guests to the show, and they're going to be talking about some of the projects that they're working on.
Glenn, it's funny you talked about the attitudes of wealth. I chant that every morning.
Okay. All right. It's a beautiful thing. I'm going to, Melinda Reyes.
Yes?
I just want to invite you to the show, and please tell us a little bit about what you're up to and what you're doing and, what your program And I need you to do that in about 5 minutes, okay?
Okay, sure. I'll probably do it in less than five. My name is Melinda Reyes. I work with First Data Merchant Services Corporation, and basically we are the global leader in payment processing, and that means is giving businesses the ability to accept payments electronically, and we do that in a couple of ways. The number one way is through the credit cards and the debit cards, allowing the businesses to accept payments from their customers via the credit card and the debit card. And then the other way is also through electronic check acceptance. We could help businesses also to take the checks electronically. It could be in person or it could be online, however they need to get the payment, the best way for their business model to accept payments from their customers. And it just helps the business to get their cash flow a lot quicker as opposed to waiting for a check through the mail, or, you know, not having the ability to reach out to people and touch them. They can actually take the credit card payments over the telephone or online, e-commerce, and, of course, face-to-face transactions in regular retail stores. We also set them up with a terminal. So we have many mechanisms of helping the business to accept payments and increase their cash flow. And one of the best things that I can say about working with First Data is that we are the technical leader in technology, and we just received the award from McDonald's, one of our customers, for Sole Supplier of the Year in 2008, so we're very proud of that as well, and receiving accolades from other customers such as Target and Walmart. And we also work with the government, and one of the best things, too, about what we have is really security, because nowadays, being identity theft being very prevalent and fraud being very prevalent, we have the mechanisms and assistance in place to really keep all of that information, that data, secure. We do other things for the company with regards to working with banks and a lot of other types of things, but my area of expertise is in helping small to mid-sized businesses accept the credit card payments from their customers.
Very great, very great. So your particular expertise and area is small businesses. So you work with small businesses and being able to generate.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And you're welcome to stay on. And I'm going to go ahead, 710-1955.
Yes, hello, Glenn.
Oh, it is you. Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm excellent. Welcome to the show, Wealth Club.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself and let people know who you are and what you're up to, Mr. Dixon.
Hi, my name is Gashar Dixon. I'm actually the Chief Acquisitions Officer at Englestone. We're an investment firm focused in Brooklyn, New York, of a small multifamily, anywhere roughly between 4 and 40 units. We look to acquire. Currently, we've taken a more of a social responsible role. We currently are in a position right now where a lot of minorities are experiencing difficulties with housing and financing due to predatory lending, unscrupulous lending, and we're looking to correct that situation as much as we can. Currently, we're looking to raise a fund about $5 million. We do have a portion of that, but definitely would like to hit that $5 million mark. And what we're doing is we're helping individuals that are in trouble, whether it be they're behind on their mortgage payment, whether it be their mortgage is higher than their house is worth. We look to come in and get these individuals qualified for a new loan through FHA, refinance, fixed interest rate, at roughly 80% of what their property is really worth. On the other side of that, we negotiate with the banks directly to buy their note roughly at 60 cents on the dollar. And the position that banks are in, for the most part, they don't like the short sale or foreclose. It reflects negatively when they look to borrow money from the Federal Reserve. And what they prefer to do is sell that debt off on the secondary market through securitization, which has since really 2007 gone extinct. You know, it's down roughly 98%. So we take private funds looking to buy the note of homeowners. Just to give you an example, I know the concept may sound a little tricky, but if you have a house roughly that's worth $425,000, the mortgage is $425,000. Say the home is worth $400,000. We would get the owner a loan roughly at around $320,000, anywhere between $320,000 and $360,000. We use the high end, $360,000. We would offer the bank roughly about $240,000 for that note, probably settle at about $280,000. So we buy that note $425,000 for $280,000. We get the owner refinanced in a good loan at roughly $320,000. They would obviously be in a note roughly with about 80 grand in equity, the difference between the 320 and the 400,000 which the property is worth. And our investment partners would make the difference between the 280 and the 320,000. We are doing this roughly anywhere we can, anybody that will qualify. If you look at what it does to that owner, they had negative equity of negative $25,000, and now they're positive equity, roughly $80,000. That's $105,000 turnaround in equity in a very strong position. So we're looking to do this and carry this out throughout our community. And if you know anybody that would be interested or can possibly be helped, or if you're in this particular situation, please contact Glenn or myself.
Yes,
Glenn, is it okay?
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly give your contact information as well.
Okay, fantastic. To get more information, I do have a more information on this program. You can email me. I'm best reached at G Dixon, that's G-D-I-X-O-N, at Englestone, Englestone.com. G Dixon at Englestone.com. You can also call me in the office at 718-710-1955.
Great, great. And you can also get a hold of me. And we're just about out of time. Melinda, would you leave your information, your number, and email as well?
Sure. It's 646-894-7038. And my email is Melinda, M-E-L-I-N-D-A, .Reyes, R-E-Y-E-S, at First Data, F-I-R-S-T-D-A-T-A, .com.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you for all of my guests tonight. It's a real pleasure. This is the International Black Summit Network. The Wealth Club is the show. And I'm your host, Glenn Greenidge. We're a biweekly show. We're looking to impact the financial intelligence and people's net worth. Also, want to let you know very quickly that we've got also some shows on Sundays. So the first Sunday of the month we have On Track. We have on the second Sunday, Let's Celebrate. On the third Sunday is Vision Works. And then on the fourth Sunday is Man of the Month. And then we have a special show when there's a fifth Sunday in the month. And so we've got a different, lot of different things that we're bringing to our International Black Summit Talk Show Network. So the Sunday shows are spiritual in nature, innovative. We celebrate and acknowledge and create some visions for who we are in the future and what's possible. And then the biweekly show, Wealth Club, is intended to focus on investing through real estate, stocks, and we also have the open forum that Melinda and Gashir participated. This is the International Black Summit Network. Thank you for being part of the show. The show is available by downloading. You can also create a podcast, and as well as iTunes. The www.blacksummit.org/talkshow, and I'll bring you right to our link, and you can download the show. Again, thank you to all of my wonderful guests. We're here to empower and impact our community, making it more vibrant through knowledge and information, and certainly by investing. Thank you so much. Peace and blessings. And the last thing I want to say is lucrative opportunities always come our way. Peace and blessings. Thank you and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.